So, in today's podcast, we're joined by Margaret Brown, an executive leadership coach specializing in culture change and author of Culture Pays, bringing to life her Leadershift model. So, in this podcast, we spoke to the Leadershift model, which is all about listening, learning, leading with vision. What is the vision? Leveraging potential in people and living by values. Are we really living by our values? And what came out for me, I think, on this particular podcast was a real sense of the need of connecting with your employees, connecting with your organization, connecting with human beings. So, Johnny, what came up for you in this? What was really impactful?
Yeah, I mean, culture, it's a hot topic, I think, in so many ways. And leaders want to, many leaders are wanting to create great cultures. But how do you do that? And it was a really practical, applicable session, conversation with Margaret, and she's really very experienced in it. And for me, it was a very rich but practical and applicable session as to, well, how do you do this? How does she do it? How do you do it? She has her framework, as you say, the Leadershift model, very applicable again. But the whole process, it was wonderful. So for those of you leaders who are wanting to create a great culture, and also, as she talks about, leadership happening at all levels as well. So, and I think, the importance of feedback, and again, feedback in a safe environment. But it was just like such a rich conversation about culture, and how to create great cultures.
Yeah, and there's some really lovely practical examples as well she gave of organizations she has worked for and the impact that that has had, not just in terms of culture and people, but also the fact that this is, it pays financially as well. It pays for the companies to do this. It pays for organizations to do this, to look at their culture and improve it and make better connection with the people within their organizations. So yeah, enjoy the podcast.
Yes, enjoy.
So, good morning, listeners. Today we're joined by Margaret Brown, an executive leadership coach specializing in culture change and author of Culture Pays, bring to life her Leadershift model. So, hi, Margaret. It's really great to have you here.
Hi, it's an absolute pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much.
Yes, and Margaret, really just jumping straight in, working with culture as you do in organizations and culture, for me, the question is always like, what inspired you to work with organizations and particularly with their culture?
Oh gosh, well, I think there's two main answers to that question. First of all, going way back into my younger years when I was an employee, particularly doing menial jobs as a student, plate washing in hotels and cleaning and care homes and things like that. And the way we were treated, like we were just absolutely nothing. People barking orders at us, no thanks, checking up, no trust. And I remember thinking then, gosh, this is just a holiday job. Some people go through their entire lives being treated like this. And although I had no idea what my career would look like in the future, I just had this massive sense of injustice that people were treated so badly and how it made me feel. So it made me feel A, very stressed, demotivated, low, and quite anarchic in some cases. So, for example, once I was working in a care home and it was a sackable offence to eat anything off the patient's lunch trays.
No way. Goodness
So,
me.
yeah, so basically anything that was left over after lunch would be put in these pig swill bins and taken to the local farm.
Yeah.
So I did steal potatoes off and have a potato, not because I wanted a potato, but just because for the sheer, just rebellion about how we were being treated. Because I thought we're actually lower than the pigs. The pigs get the food, but we're sacked if we take a potato. So that was one thing. And then the other thing was, when I started my training 35 years ago, I specialized in sales training because that was my background. And that very quickly morphed into running customer care training. And I learned very, very quickly that you can't train people in service excellence if it's on a foundation of bad leadership. Because every single session I ran just became a leadership bashing session. It's the managers that need to be here. They don't give us what we need and that sort of thing. So I learned very quickly that the missing piece was leadership. And so through one of my big contracts, which was a national IT company, I was introduced to a leadership development company in London. I live in Aberdeen, by the way. And this company had picked up a contract with one of the major oil and gas companies up here. And they were looking for someone to do customer care training for their help desk staff in the IT department. So they came and watched me training in London and said, "Would you shadow us on the leadership piece?" Because that's what they do. They start at the top with the leaders. So they gather lots of feedback from customers, lots of feedback from employees. They took them away and I shadowed them in this lovely hotel in Deeside. And I thought, this is it. This is exactly what it is. And it just very quickly became my thing. So they mentored me and trained me, and I inhaled books on leadership. I had done a bit of educational psychology, so that helped as well. And that was the start of it. And that was back in the early 90s. And then the trajectory just went from there. So those were the two things. You can't do customer service with demotivated people. And plus, I'd experienced it firsthand.
And I love that piece about, it comes down to the leadership. It comes down to the people who are at the top, essentially, and the culture comes from there. I'm really curious about what, in your experience, needs to happen for leaders, and maybe it's something to do with kind of inner work there, that needs to shift in order for that behavior change and that culture change to happen within an organization.
A great question. I think the main thing is awareness. Most of the leaders I work with are not toxic leaders. Toxic leaders don't come on leadership training courses or read leadership books. I've always found that the people that least think they need it are always the ones that most do. They're not coachable. However, I find that most leaders have good intentions, and it's just the lack of awareness. So this is why it's so important to start off by listening to their employees. And we might talk about my model later, because leadership's not a process. When I look back over things that I've done with clients to shift their culture, it all starts with listening, which is the first step in my model. So I'll go out and gather huge amounts of feedback from employees through surveys, focus groups, one-to-ones. I just ask them, "Look, I'm needing to get a health check. I'm working with your leaders to really shift your culture, and make it a great place to work for you. So what do you like about working here? What's working well? What do your leaders do best? And what do you need from them? What are the blockers?" And then the floodgates tend to open then. Excuse me. So that's the starting point. And then I go away with the leaders, and it's a vast amount of feedback. We have metrics, which I'll come to in a second, but most of it is unedited, raw comments. And what I do is I put the comments on posters all the way around the room, and it can be three deep, sometimes A1 posters with different colours and fonts. And then once we've set the scene, they just go around and look at these comments and absorb them, and then they really feel it. I don't think anything's going to change if you don't feel it. You can run an intellectual presentation, you can read a leadership theory book, and it all makes great sense. But unless you really feel it, and oh my goodness, this is what our people are saying, we need to do something about this.
I can imagine
Sorry.
that's just so impactful for a leader to go in and see all those comments, like you say, three deep, and to see, a whole room, be surrounded by all those, that immediate emotional feedback, really, I guess.
It's massively impactful. Before we do, I work in a different room with them, and I give them the context and the setting. Nobody was putting the boot in. They just love being listened to. And the thing is, these people don't speak up in meetings with their leaders. People are just, historically, there's a suspicion of people in authority, even if they're very approachable. So my message to them would be very clear. If they're not talking to you, they almost certainly are speaking about you, because I couldn't stop them once they started. But there was no sense of putting the boot in. They just wanted to be heard. And there's now an expectation that things are going to change. So I set the context about how we did it, how I assured them that there would be no witch hunt afterwards, that they could be open and honest with me. I don't even ask their names, so they know that I'm not going to be reporting back, "Oh, that Johnny said this and Emily said that." There's none of that. And And then I share all the positive feedback with them, not because it's just nice, but because it's important they understand what people appreciate so they can do more of those things and build on those things. And I always ask them how they feel receiving that positive feedback. And they say, yeah, it feels really good. We don't hear it very often. I said, well, please hang on to that because your people need exactly the same. And now we're going to go into the main room where we're going to look at the formative feedback. I don't call it negative feedback. I call it formative feedback. And I'm honest, it's going to be quite hard hitting, but I just want you to take your time. Don't discuss it, please. Just go around the room and just take as long as you need to just absorb the feedback on the wall. And then we'll discuss it after that. And what I'm doing is I'm watching how they respond to it. So if there's anyone kind of rolling their eyes and saying, oh, they've got a job, what else do they want? I think, okay, you're in my sights now. And although this sounds very harsh, but what I'm looking for is for them to be quite upset by it, because the upset people will challenge the people that are dismissing it. And so the outcome, and it takes a couple of days at least to go through this properly, but the outcome is they identify the trends. And there's normally, I mean, although there's hundreds and hundreds of comments, there might be between 7 and 10 trends maximum. We don't even know who they are. The values are just a poster campaign, all that kind of stuff is on the walls. So then they create commitments, which they then share with, from those trends, always starting with we will. We will ensure that people have the tools that they need to do their jobs, things like that. And under the umbrella of these we will commitment statements, then they create more extensive actions. So
And
that's a
it's
starting point.
Margaret, it's wonderful to hear your process there. Yeah, I was really kind of engaged in imagining, a leader listening to this. And for me, I was quite interested in those trends, and it's, have you seen, are there kind of common patterns?
Yes, very good question. So I work with multiple industry sectors. So because I'm based in Aberdeen, a lot of my client base have been oil and gas, which is typical, of course, a very male-dominated industry, hardware, engineering, all about deliverables, production. So the people side tends to be neglected. But across all sectors, professional services, even hospitality, construction, the automotive industry, I've worked with all of these industries, and there tends to be commonality. And the number one is that people don't feel they're being listened to. There's a common mantra of do more with less, which is affecting people's stress and mental health. When I ask about, because I always make sure I've researched what their values are on their websites and so on. And so alongside the value statement, sorry, alongside the posters on the wall are their value statements. So I always ask the employees, how do your leaders demonstrate that they're living by these values? And almost always in every sector, it's just a poster campaign. Their values are all just about making money. So these are common in just about every single sector, not being listened to, do more with less. The value is just a poster campaign. Yeah, I would say those are probably the most common ones. Silos, them and us. Common in every single one. And all of it's about leadership. The leaders have to create that environment. And I don't care whether that's a corner shop or a corporation or even a country, the person at the top sets the tone.
It's fascinating. It's so funny. You say do more with less, because I was saying, I think I had a dream about that last night. It was really weird. And then did I see it on TV or did I not? It's so funny when you're kind of like, we're talking about consciousness here. And I think I had a almost like a premonition dream of like, it was a situation of like, do more with less. It's like, it seems to be quite a theme. But I love this, the values side of things, and how are they, behaviors and, those values in action, the behaviors that they actually see, and that more often than not, it's just words on a poster. And so, Margaret, your model, so I call it a model. Is it a framework or a model?
I guess it's a little bit of both. So most people that I work with are very much left brain IQ focused. They're highly skilled and competent in how they run their business, the measures, commercial nous, regulatory adherence, all those things. and also what they do. So whether that's making cupcakes or drilling for oil is the bedrock of what they do. And obviously they're highly competent in these. And the thing about those two aspects is they're easy to measure. You can set goals and targets around what you produce, around, your forecasting and so on. So obviously they receive attention. The people side, of course, is not really a process. It's very messy. It's definitely an art. And that's much more an EQ, emotional intelligence piece. So, and you're dealing with people, and people are fickle. As I said, people don't have bad, most people don't have bad intentions. Just to go back a little bit before I complete the answer to your question. Once we've absorbed all this feedback on the wall, I ask them to raise their hands if they get up in the morning with the intention of demotivating their people. And of course, nobody puts their hands up. So that tells me you've got great intentions, but this people side is really difficult. You can tell by the comments. We've got different opinions, different beliefs, different generations, different upbringings, different, cultural backgrounds. And trying to align that behind a vision and get people on board and motivated is not easy. So although we can't put a process on it per se, most IQ leaders like something that they can hang this around. So when I really dived in deep to the way I work, I thought there is actually a sort of a process here. I mean, everything is bespoke for that client, depending on their values, their vision, and the feedback I receive. But then I recognize that it starts with listening. Me listening to them, what are your pain points, what are your objectives, and then them listening to the employees. And then so I created this framework, my five L's, because after we've done the listening, the next one is learn. What have we learned from this? What have we learned that we need to do differently? What do I need to learn to be the best version of me and to raise my awareness and be a great leader? What books do I need to read, podcasts I need to listen to? And what am I hearing from my staff? There's a huge piece around learning. And now that we're aware, the next one is lead, which is around leading with vision. So how do we get people bought into our vision? So although we're all very different, we're on the same page with the same direction. So that's the lead piece. I'm very passionate about vision and the vision being aspirational, making a difference in the world. So if we're going to do that, we then have to leverage the potential in our people, which is the fourth L. So there's gigantic untapped potential out there in every organization. People turn up, they do a job. If they're not being motivated, they just do what they have to do to get paid. And there's a huge financial number to this, which I'll come to later. So how do we tap into that potential, make sure that they have what they need, so we really have agile, high-performing teams? And then the fifth L is, are we really living by our values? We've got these lovely value statements that people are our greatest asset and we treat people with dignity and respect, but are we actually embedding and living by those? So these, although it follows a sort of pattern, they're not standalone. So in my framework, it's set up as a circle of jigsaw pieces. They all interact with each other, but at any stage, these come into play. But it does follow a kind of pattern. We get this piece right, we get the listening right, then we learn from that, and then we lead with vision, get the best out of our people, and really make sure we're embedding our values. And if we get all that right, there's actually a sixth L, which is legacy. How do we want to be remembered as leaders in this organization? So I mentioned a number because, again, with left brain IQ people, they like numbers. So I start every session with some numbers because it's the business case for so-called soft skills. And most of my leaders say, we've done these things before. So at best they're skeptical, at worst they're hostile. So I'm used to both. So I have lots of empathy. I appreciate you're all very busy people. I know you've got a lot of responsibility, and you'll be wondering if this is the best use of your time. So I'll do everything I can to make sure that this is good use of your time, but let's put it in an economic context. So I follow Gallup very closely. It's a great source of data for all leaders. And every year they conduct an employee survey of 2 million people around the world. And they've just released the results of the 25-26 survey. And globally, they found that 59% of people are disengaged or what we call quiet quitting. They're there, they're doing their job. Clues in the word quiet. We don't know why they're not happy or why they might be leaving or looking for another job and not being productive. But leaders don't know, hence the listening is so important. But this year, the actual measurable cost of that quiet quitting was $10 trillion globally, or 9% of global GDP. And that was up from $8.9 trillion last year. So it's getting worse. And I'm sure this do more with less comes into play here. People are stressed. As I said, they're not being listened to. And we've got a mental health epidemic that's costing the world a fortune as well. So I always start with these numbers and this metric. And then I say, and of course, that's quite a shocking number. And so people's eyes open and their ears prick up at this. And I say, now let's see how that compares with your organization. So one of the metrics that I use is I always ask employees, have you ever considered leaving this company for reasons other than unavoidable personal circumstances? And it's almost always over half say yes. And that fits exactly with the Gallup stat. And suddenly, oh my goodness, this is costing us. So there's other metrics and numbers I can use, but the numbers talk. And then we can move into, actually talking about the leadership model and how to address that. So
And do you then revisit those numbers at the end of your work,
I
or
do.
sometime after?
Yeah,
And what?
I do now, depending on the size of the organization. So one of the case studies in my book is about an oil and gas company I worked with a number of years ago. Now, this was very much a good to great. This wasn't transforming a toxic culture. I've worked on some of those too, radical culture change, but this was very much good to great. So when I started working with them, their staff turnover was sitting at around 12%. And I worked with them for 3 years. At the end of the 3 years, their turnover was under 1%, and they were number eight in the Sunday Times Top 100 companies to work for. Unheard of in that industry sector, to the point that we were asked to write a paper for the Society of Petroleum Engineers, an SPE paper. It's very much a foundation of this industry, and presented to Offshore Europe, which is the biggest energy conference in the world outside Houston. So very satisfying. But then when you go back in and speak to people and just say what's changed since we started this, and they say things like, well, I was offered more money to go somewhere else, but there's no way I'd leave this company. It's great. One guy did leave and said, and thankfully they had me back, because you don't realize what you've got until you don't have it. And it was all, and you know, it was the small things. I used to visit the offshore platforms and speak to the guys out there as well. And I just remember this guy in the control room saying, at last, someone's listening to us. We got the pool table fixed, we got the ice cream machine fixed. The leaders are coming out and spending time with us rather than sitting with the rig manager all the time, which is what they tended to do. And they were doing things like they would call the platforms on Christmas Day and pass the phone around and speak to the guys and say, look, we really appreciate what you're doing. They put a bit of budget into the facilities management company to make sure that they got a really nice Christmas Day lunch with alcohol-free beer, for example. And they sent hampers to their wives. So it was small things that didn't cost a lot, but made a huge difference. And that's what the leaders couldn't believe. They said, well, I can't believe it. It cost us nothing to fix the pool table. Now, had we not done all this feedback at the beginning, there is no way they'd have prioritized going to the platforms, sitting with the guys in the galley, because they would not have seen the value.
No.
Because these guys are managing sort of billion-dollar budgets and things, but because of all that feedback, they really felt, oh my goodness, we need to go and actually engage properly and listen. Transform. So the biggest improvement in everything was the relationship between onshore and offshore.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing in almost every company in that sector.
And what's
Then.
coming up for me is that I know, like you say, financially it's tiny because it's just those little things. But what I'm really hearing there is connection. It's
Yes.
that sense of, oh, no, it's not just, I'm not just connecting with my team every day because that's what we do all the time, but actually having connection with the leadership, actually having connection from top down, makes a huge difference. and being
But
listened to, being
it is the
heard.
difference. And the big things, the small things are the big things. And it's no different in a family. I mean, you
No.
could share your children with very, very expensive toys, but if you're ignoring them, not speaking to them and only speaking about work and telling them to shut up, they're not going to grow up as healthy, productive, confident adults. It's no different. I mean, we're people, whether you're leading a family or a country, the principles are the same. So it's just the lack of, I think it's the awareness of the impact. I think that's what it is. When they really see and hear the impact of these small behaviors. And that's the good news. It's not going to cost a fortune to transform the culture. It's just having this constant awareness. One of the things I advise my leaders to do is to keep a copy of their values visible on their desk. Mine are on my wall here. And at the end of each day, just look at the value statements and say, what did I do today to demonstrate that I believe people are our greatest asset? Did I call a town hall and just talk about numbers? Or did I call a town hall and appreciate they're giving up their time and just give some recognition to a few people who did something innovative? And thanks to this kind of thing, guys, this is exactly how we're meeting our targets, because you people who are our greatest asset are going above and beyond, and I really appreciate that. So it's changing the conversation a little bit. And again, it's just an awareness thing. Of course we need to talk about the profits. I mean, it would be naive and stupid to think otherwise, but that's all people hear is money, money, profit, profit. So just slightly tweaking that conversation costs nothing, doesn't take any longer, and just saying thank you.
And for us, the podcast is about awakening conscious leadership. You've just spoken to, the awareness of the impact that their behavior is having that, being conscious of that, being aware of that, and the difference that can have, and making it practical and applicable. And I was curious then, you've touched on a few things, particularly listening and those small acts of connection and relationship and the things that make the difference. I was just curious in terms of patterns that you see in thriving cultures, what might they be typically?
How interesting. So I mentioned that I work with a lot of engineering, left brain, driven companies, and I'm very reluctant to use the F word, which is feel, how are we all feeling. But I can honestly tell when you go into an organization with a thriving culture, you can actually feel it. Although I use the word sense, right? You can sense it. You get a happy greeting from the person on reception. Or if it's in a shop or a restaurant, they're happy to serve you. And that's all about leadership. If you get someone who's indifferent, and by the way, in service, 68% of people stop buying because of perceived indifference, and we typically don't complain. So we don't know whether people are happy or not. So, gosh, there's a thousand things I could say here. But if you're getting indifferent services, because either the leaders don't understand the importance of appointing people with good attitudes, or they're not getting what they need or being treated well, so they become indifferent. They're part of that quiet quitting statistic. I'm just here to do a job. Now, I love the way Disney train their people. They talk about when you are dealing with customers, anywhere you can be seen or heard by a customer, you're on stage. I don't care if you didn't sleep last night. Or had a row with your partner, you can be as miserable as you like off stage, but anywhere you can be seen or heard by a customer, you're on stage. So, I mean, us today, I don't know what's been happening with you last night and vice versa. I mean, maybe we could have had a dreadful evening last night and no sleep, but the show has to go on because it's going out there to people now. And this again, it's back to leadership. We need to make sure people got the right attitudes, we give them what they need, we make them feel valued. And that they understand that they are part of that big picture. We're a company that's going for excellence in everything we do, whether it's a restaurant, a shop, or whatever. And you are the face of this company. You're important, you're special, and you matter. What do you need to get to deliver excellence? So it's all, I mean, everything's about leadership, literally everything, whether it's a school, a family, as I said before. But yes, so that to answer your question, Johnny, that was a very long-winded answer to you can feel it, a thriving culture. You can sense it by the way people are behaving when they deliver service to you.
Because I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because all the leaders and founders I work with, as you say, I love what was that question you had? Is that did you wake up today wanting to demotivate people? I just thought it was a brilliant, brilliant question because, of course, they don't. They want to motivate people. They're visionary. They've built something often from the ground up. The founders I work with, and they have a great vision. And often what tends to happen, and all that you've been talking about different sectors. I work a lot in the tech sector, for example. And, often what's happening is that they're scaling rapidly, as an example, and then trying to and they want to have great cultures. But it's often, well, how do I do that? Is the question. How do I go about doing that? And this is what I love, this just coming back to your six L's there, because I felt there was so much in that model, the starting with the listening and the awareness, then the learning from that awareness. And you spoke through that wonderful process and the importance of having feedback, to really to know what's actually going on. Often with the founders or the CEOs I work with, we call it the CEO disease, that people aren't telling them, because of for whatever reason, they won't necessarily be honest about the feedback. Of course, this your process is anonymous, so they're learning from that and they're unlocking that potential. And then there's also I love this leading with vision, that I often talk about the leadership model of, we've heard it in different ways of vision alignment and execution, championing that, having that vision, having a compelling vision. But the piece I think which I love is I love it all, and I can see the interlocking model here. But it's the leveraging the potential of your people, and that those people matter, and that collective potential that is there, unlocking that collective potential from. It's interesting you speak as we do as well, that leadership happens in your life, not just at work. It happens in families, and I talk about that the system. You're in the system, you're unlocking the potential from the system. I was just curious around that. Obviously, it's an interlocking model, but my question is that, I love it. I just looked at the top of it here. You must give a damn about your people. Is that because, and I was just curious, like, I'm a leader listening to the show, to this podcast, and, I've listened to the model, listening to your examples, listening to your process. I'm just thinking, how might they go about, obviously then putting this in process? Obviously, you've got the book Culture Pays, but, thinking about the tips that you might give them to walk away with today after listening to this, what might you give them?
Right, so you're right. Starting point is you have to give a damn about people, and you have to show that you give a damn about people. So first of all, being visible. It's easy to sit in your office and deal with all the big ticket items, but you can't put a price on walking the floor and knowing people's names and using the word we. If you can use the word we as much as possible, look, guys, we know we're going through a difficult time. We're going through difficult economic times. We're going through, the surge in AI and adapting to that. We're working off in hybrid situations. Do you think we can make a go of this? What do you suggest we do to make things better? You're at the coal face. What do you think we should do? So it's back to listening again and using that word we. And don't, and I think a lot of leaders feel that they have to look strong and be authoritative. Again, with the best of intentions, but actually humility is probably one of the best and most underrated qualities of leaders. And saying, look, we don't have all the answers. That's not weak, that's strong. We don't have all the answers. I'd also say a good tip is go and watch Undercover Boss. I'm not
Oh,
great at
yes.
reality television, but the eye-opening for that program when they go in disguise into their organizations and work with frontline people. So I'm effectively doing the undercover boss role. So that humility is, I think, probably one of the most, I'd say, one of the most underrated qualities of leaders. Because people will have your back when they realize that you're human, and admit to mistakes. Look, we probably went down the wrong track with this. We recognize that. This is what we're going to do differently. What do you think? So engage people as much as possible. I mean, obviously, there's going to be times when you have to be very decisive during emergency situations or, critical situations where you have to be decisive. But otherwise, being out listening, collaborating, talking about we asking for people's feedback. Sorry, Johnny, you mentioned feedback earlier, and I believe that feedback is the lifeblood of both implementing and sustaining positive change. And you have to create a culture where people feel safe to give feedback. So, to go back to your question of what would you advise people to do, start working feedback in a safe way into your daily practices. So, for example, at the end of a meeting, you might say, okay, I want to talk about how we worked there. What do you think we did well as a team in that meeting? And it could be, well, Emily, you did a really great job of making sure that everyone participated. Johnny, you had a really fantastic idea about X, Y, and Z, and that sparked a great conversation. So model giving, I call it motivational feedback, very specific and very genuine. And then say, what could we have done better? Whilst you were very passionate about your ideas, Johnny, I did notice a bit of a tendency to talk over people. So just be aware of how that might impact your team out in the wider workplace. And just get into the habit of asking people for feedback. I do have in my book, I have example emails that you can send out to people and say, I'm really working on my leadership. I want you to feel you can give me feedback. So just give me an example of two things I'm doing well as your leader, two things I could improve on. And if you want to make it anonymous, find a way of doing that. But you want to model it and not just giving it, by the way, receiving it. You have to receive it graciously. You might have to sort of grit your teeth and swallow hard because not everyone's skilled in giving really good feedback, but there will always be a grain of truth in it. Say, okay, I think I need to reflect on that, but thank you for speaking up. Humility.
And what would you say are the sort of signs that a company or an organization are kind of becoming disengaged, and that culture is not as good as it might be, that there is that disconnection, disengagement, and there's maybe a sense of being psychologically unsafe. What would you say are the first warning signs of an organization in that state?
Well, some of them might be invisible to the leaders. So how people talk about their company when they're out socializing, for example, or absenteeism goes up. Attrition is one of the best measures. Now, again, without all that feedback that we gather, a lot of leaders, so they just go somewhere else for more money. That's what the perception of most leaders are, that people move for more money. If they're very, very happy and they love their job and there's career progression for them, that they're appreciated, then they're going, most of they're going to stay. So I worked with one company, and this was a radical culture change program. It was a facilities management company that provided catering and cleaning and medical services to the oil and gas platforms. And the feedback from the clients, which was the major operators, Shell, BP, those kind of companies, was shocking. And so it was going to go out to tender this with one of the major operators for this company. So we did the same thing. We gathered all the feedback from the clients and from employees. And so one wall in the conference room had all the employee feedback. The other wall had all the client feedback. There was a direct correlation between that, the one wall and the other wall. So it was very radical, but the feedback was shocking. Again, lack of awareness, but the managing director was fantastic. He took the whole thing, full responsibility. He said, I have a goal. I want to pass the pub test. And what he meant by that was, I want to know that when my people are out with their friends, that they're talking happily about us. Anyway, so fast forward 2 or 3 years, he started coming as a guest speaker to some of my other client culture change programs to talk about how they did it and what the results were. And by the way, at the end of this, the major oil and gas operator said, we're not even putting this out to tender. We've never seen such a sea change in attitude as we've seen with this. It was incredible. Don't get me wrong, it was hard, it was tough. And some people it didn't work for them. They left the company, but for the employees, it was a radically huge improvement, and the clients. So anyway, he ends his talk with, This woman was overheard in a pub in Buckie, which is a very small coastal town in the northeast of Scotland, overheard in a pub saying, "How do I get a job with that XYZ company? I hear they treat their people very well." I get goosebumps just remembering that. So he'd passed the pub test, and that was his measure. So, as I said earlier on, you just get a sense of whether the company is going well. If people seem downbeat or indifferent, absenteeism is high, then you know that there's a problem and you're part of that $10 trillion quiet quitting measure.
That's fantastic.
I mean, we have it's such a rich conversation, Margaret, and I know, every leader I work with, is working with culture, on one level or another, and want to build great cultures, and it's just wonderful to hear. I'm just thinking, with the last few minutes that we have, what do you think, you would like to kind of leave the listener with, anything else from, obviously we've been talking about tips, you've got a richness there, but anything else that you think, just before we close, that they might want to hear.
Well, first of all, you don't have to have a title of leader to be a leader. You know, if you can influence people, that's what great leaders do. They influence and they inspire. So you could be part of a team, but you're leading in that respect. So even if you don't have the title of leader, and you're an aspiring, you have ambition to aspire to the top. Even if you're not able to have an impact on the senior leaders in your company, if you're a bit further down the organization, you can still take those leadership values in your career to future companies and or if you're become a business founder. So what's very interesting now is I'm finding that middle managers I worked with in the past, 20, 25 years ago, have now moved to the top of companies and they've taken all this with them. So they've created great cultures, which is their legacy. A lot of them now retired and they've left a legacy. People still talk about them. So yes, you don't have to be a title of leader to be a leader. But I just think if everyone who's listening could ask themselves, what am I doing to make a positive difference in the lives of people that I work, the work for me or with me and our clients and the bigger world? I just think I'm motivated by making a difference. I mean, I honestly, my vision is that all leaders in any capacity, whether it's institutional, retail, corporate, public sector, my vision is that all leaders understand that the well-being and happiness of people is good for them, good for their business, good for the economy, and good for society. Remember that $10 trillion. Now, obviously, I can't change the world. But my mission under that is to create transformative coaching and training programs that make a difference with those organizations, because we change the world one person at a time. So whatever you're doing as a listener, whether you lead a team of three people or a corporation, you can make a positive difference in the world by adopting these simple but not easy principles and just keeping your awareness alive.
Lovely. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Margaret. It's been an absolute joy to hear you speak and to talk about culture change and what that kind of includes and what is needed in that space. And it's really lovely to hear about your leadership model and those five aspects and that last one about legacy. That's an interesting one. And what came up for me really was that, really, what is it? What can we do as a, what can our leaders do, to make that positive difference to the people who are within their organization? And for me, that what really, really came across was connection. The importance of connecting, the importance of connecting with the people in your organization and listening to what is needed in order to be able to create a better culture for who people to work in. So thank
Yes.
you so much, Margaret.
Well,
It's been
thank
really
you so
lovely.
much. And just one thing I'd like to add, I don't want to do a sales pitch for my book. However, what really people might be interested in is it's very much a how-to book. So it's packed with anecdotes and case studies about things like we've spoken about. But for each of the five L's, there are six very short chapters, maybe three or four pages, and each chapter ends with five action points, the leadership payoff, and three reflection prompts to just encourage leaders to reflect on each section of the book. So it's very much a how-to book.
Wonderful, thank you. And you mentioned a masterclass that you would like to
Yes, well,
just.
I've started running short free master classes around the model, and and they will have a takeaway from that. So it's not just designed as a teaser to sell an expensive training program. They very much will have takeaways from each of the sections. So I run those free. The next one's going to be the 26th of May at 4:30 GMT, or no, BST. It's British Summertime now, isn't it? So, and that will be all over LinkedIn if people want to follow me on LinkedIn and find the details there. And the book's called Culture Pays, which, by the way, is not just a title, it's a fact.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, Margaret, I think you spoke to it there. Is that, for me, I found this a very practical and applicable conversation as well. And I've really been sat in the shoes, put myself in the shoes of a leader here. And I think at the end there, really ultimately, for me, the question I would ask the leaders listening here is, what's the legacy that you want to lead, actually, rather than leave. But yeah, what's the legacy that you want to leave, and how might you make a work to create a great thriving culture?
And it's very profitable too to do that as well.
Yeah, the
So,
bottom line is it the three Ps, is it people, profit, and planet?
right.
Yeah, so wonderful to hear. Well, look, Margaret, thank you so much for
Thank
today.
you.
Wonderful to have you on the show. Looking forward to hearing more about how everything goes with you. And so thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.